accession number 22077, reel 16.
Because we got to know quite a few people very soon. And the section was very good. I had one of my chaps from Germany, Arthur Massey. We called him the Count. He was a quite posh bugger. And he was a good chap, but he was a womanizer. He had lots of trouble with him and women. But anyway, he was one of my best sergeants, actually, there. And once again, I found it irksome because my job was to check every report that came in and see that they had done their job properly. And I did very few inquiries, unless it was important.
Right. So what was the main burden of work there? And what were the crimes that that you were sending your chaps out on? Not at all like Japan, then?
No, nothing like Japan.
Yeah.
Of course, it was our colony then. We were the kingpins there, and all the civil police were very good with us. We all knew each other. And first of all, let me go back before you do anything else. The first Sunday I was there, I went to the Methodist Church. All right? Mm-hmm. And you'll have to believe it because it's true. I was going to say you won't believe this. I went down there. It wasn't the Methodist Church. I'll remember the name shortly. But it was all denominations. And the padre there, Padre Small, what a lovely man he was. He'd been a prisoner of war of the Japanese. And they desecrated his church and all sorts of things. And he'd been in China before, by the way, but nice man. Anyway, Padre Small and the United Board, it was called. And I see him now in the pulpit. It was packed. He said, once again, he said, we've had this twice in the last couple of years. Our choirmaster is going home. Anyone who could sit? And of course, I went out and offered, and I was choirmaster there for 3 years. And it was wonderful. We had a wonderful time. In fact, three of the people became a bandmaster, and he teaches oboe up there by the Lakes District. We've been up to see him, and he's been down here. He and his wife were in my choir, and Australian people, and so on. I had a wonderful time there, really.
Was there a mixture of forces there? I mean, they were British.
No, British, all British. We had no outsiders there.
Yeah.
My section was in the barracks at in Hong Kong proper.
Uh-huh.
I had a section on Hong Kong Island. I was at headquarters, mm-hmm. and I had a section at Sekong, yeah. up in the territories, right. and another section Fanling, when I used to have to visit regularly. Married quarters were quite good, actually, because on Thursdays, when we were off, we had a holiday afternoons, Thursday afternoons. We used to go to a beach called the 11 Mile Beach. Mm-hmm. Nearly all the troops went there. It was a smashing place. Lovely beach and lovely swimming. And most of us went there Thursdays. And we went to Hailing Chow, my wife and I, and people from the church. The leper colony, Island of Happy Healing, Hailing Chow. It was quite... I had been to a leper colony in India years before, and I was very upset. This didn't upset me at all. It was wonderful, really, what they could do there. And, I mean, it was all... By the time we left, Hailing Chow had almost finished. They got over all this business, but it was quite upsetting. But we went there quite often with the church folk. And
so what did you go there to do?
We went over to sing.
Oh, to sing?
Yeah, to sing. We were taken around and fed. You know, they fed us.
Right.
And we saw what they did with their hands.
Yeah.
Many of them had no hands at all, but it was wonderful jobs they used to do. It was quite... upsetting, actually, the first time we went. We got a bit used to it after a while, but we went quite often. And I joined the Hong Kong Musical Society almost as soon as I got there.
Okay.
And sang.
Stop you there.
Yeah.
Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel 15. How Harold Morris Metcalf, Reel 16. So you were in Hong Kong. Did your work vary very much from the beginning to the end of your time there? You were there for 3 years.
3 years, yes. Yeah. Yes. I told you I had this music society where we made many friends whom we met in America subsequently when they went away. And one of these people knew a photographer called Daisy Wu. And she was one of the world's number ones. And she said, why don't you come over with us and meet Daisy? So we went to meet Daisy. And when I got there, the husband looked at me and he said, you physical training, ma'am? I said, why, yes. I tell you what, my wife take picture of you with my daughter. And he said, you take shirt off, take vest off. I have it somewhere. And he has his daughter, a young girl, and she's doing this with me, you know.
Oh, arm wrestling.
And I had huge muscles at the time. And there we were. Beauty and the Beast, it was called. And it won world prizes. And I had to sign a copyright away for it, if you please. I have it on a tape somewhere upstairs. But as a result of this, I got to know these people pretty well. And the Chinese folk that I knew in the music society was absolutely wonderful. I sang three oratorios with them and took the tenor solos. And we used to, every break time, we had what we called soup, 1 ton. It was called WNTUN. I've never had it like that anywhere else. In England, the 1 ton never seems like the same. It's only, it used to be a sort of paste with meat inside. Lovely, you know, we used to love this. Anyway, I had a very good time with the Music Society, and I was top of the list, honorary member. I still got my card upstairs. And then they had a competition called Beginners Please. I wasn't exactly a beginner, but there was another sergeant, not in my section or in my squad. He was in another regiment. He was in my church choir. He said, why don't we have a go at this, Mick? He was a Welshman. And I said, yeah, all right. So I put my name down, went over and had an audition. They said, right, we'll give you a call when we want you to come over. I went over and we had another audition and they whittled it down to 10 people. And they put this show on at a huge, huge theatre there. And I sang The World Is Mine Tonight. And we've got it on the tape somewhere. And I won the competition, and I got $100, £7.10. I got the thing. They give it you in a large red envelope with all the writing on. But my wife said it was wonderful because they were listening in, you see.
Did life change very much? Did your work change very much while you were in Hong Kong?
Not me. 3 years? Not me.
Stayed very long.
Got the same sort of thing come back to me from all my sections. I still had to do it. And on the odd occasion, they had to come in for toots. Pulleams, we called them, pulse, urinate. And it was a special thing that you did. You had to run a mile, by the way, in so many minutes and so on. Now, I was a physical trainer. I was doing it all the time. It didn't worry me. I was footballing still. And I also was a referee, army referee. I got my cards upstairs. But when the lads came in for this, I said, no, we're going to do it just like it says in the book, otherwise you don't pass. And that means some of your pay will be knocked off. That was the crunch line, yes? And at Whitfield Barracks, where we were, it was huge. We had the Gurkhas with us, by the way, as well. And I used to run around there four times. It was a 440 concrete, cement, asphalt thing. And my lads always did it in the right time. So I was always very pleased with them. And I can remember one chap, he said, I haven't been on the bloody beer for months, Mick. You know? And he used to always have a real bill belly. But I always got my lads through their money. So this happened every year, you had to do this. And they often used to come into various functions. We had lots of dances and things in Hong Kong from Julia's school and so on. And we were pretty well known in Hong Kong, I think. And I played football, and we did very well. I was a centre forward, and it used to always be given out by the Forces Network. Nick Carr's been at it again. He scored two more goals today. And we had a very good sports team, the military police, by the way. And I played everywhere I'd been. And by this time, I was nearly 45, and I was beginning to feel middle age. But the physical training officer was the same Mick Walker who I told you had been on the ship coming out. So Mick, he said, it's time you were giving it up. Mick, how'd you like to be a referee? I said, but you got under 45. I can fix that for you. And Mick fixed it. And I got 2 years refereeing in. We had a very good time in Hong Kong.
You must have been sorry to leave Hong Kong.
Yes and no. We went to Japan on holiday. I took indulgence passages. Troops were usually, the ships were usually empty by the time they got to. Just a few people to take up. So we used to get indulgence passages. Cost you next to nothing, really. And I took my family up. And we were staying at the YWCA in Curie. And I remember the first day we were there. They said, you have bath. Now, people in Japan go to communal baths and everybody strips off and bathes. My wife didn't want to do this, you see. I wouldn't mind. I did before. But the point was, she said, I make you bath. And you would have thought the fire was underneath and it was a cauldron. You would have thought you were in Africa and they were coming along to you. It was really fun. And then they lathered you up before you got in. And then you got into this and they screwed you off. It was really lovely, no doubt. And I used to go to these places to have a massage as well. It was really wonderful. But I never paid, by the way, incidentally, because we used to keep a tab on these things one time. But we went out the first night and we walked down the main road and a girl accosted my son, who was very young at the time and he didn't know what to do. But I knew one of these girls and suddenly I said, hey, you know me? And she ran like hell. But we saw her again later that night. But my wife, she would tell you when she was there, she said, oh, funny, Mick. And, you know, they chat up anybody, these girls. But we had a good time while we spent in, and we went all over the place. And we went to Hiroshima. And we got photographs somewhere. And there's one man there. He shows his back to everyone. The burns, his back was awful. It was quite an eye-opener. I mean, the actual epicenter of the bomb is still there, you know, they've got this monument. And we went to the museum. I'm glad my children saw it because they must have realised what it was all about, you know. But we came back to Hong Kong. Oh, before we went to Japan, someone said, you want to be careful, Mick, she'll come back pregnant, you know. This was always the same, and we laughed, of course. When we came back, unfortunately, she was pregnant. We were a bit upset, really. My wife didn't want a third child. If we'd had three, we would have had four, because she was the third, and it was always, she was the middle one. Her eldest sister and her young, she was always left out, Julia, and it upset her quite a bit. Not that it's worried her ever since, but it did when she was a girl. And so we were upset. Anyway, suddenly we began to realise that we were looking forward to this child. And then Julie fell ill. And she was in hospital for a long time. She was bleeding all the time. And, this is the sad part of our life. She'd been in the hospital for some time. My son and I went over every day to see her. And on the 6th of May, the child was born, and we went over, and Julie was in a terribly bad way, and the baby, well, probably these days they could have saved it, but I saw the child, she was sweet, and I went into Julie, she didn't know me, she at that time, she wasn't very well, and I went over the next day, and we chatted for a while, she hadn't seen the baby at all by now, and the 8th of May was our wedding anniversary, and I'd phoned the BFN station and asked them, I said, in your favourites, could you play Because by Mario Lanza on the 8th, because it's my wedding anniversary, and he had just given this out on the radio. I got it on a tape upstairs. I was taking, when the phone rang, and I went to the phone, and the doctor said, "I'm sorry to tell you that your baby has died." So I couldn't take it in for a minute or two, and Julie never saw our child at all. I had to go over there. I went over to arrange the funeral. It had to be done that day. And my captain came with me, Kenchi. He was wonderfully supportive. And they had laid her out in the grounds on a little catafalque. And she was lovely. And those days you didn't take pictures of children. I wish I had done so, but I didn't, because Julie never saw her. And we buried her that day. And the lads were very supportive. And I had a bad couple of nights. And Julie nearly died. Of course, she'd been terribly ill, and when she did come out of hospital, she was very low, very low. And I mean, we'd been looking at my daughter nearly went round a twist, because she'd been looking forward to having a sister. Yes. I tell you.
Yes.
However, we got over it. We were Christians and we had to support ourselves. And so the 8th of May, to me, it was VE Day.
Yes.
It was the day my baby died,
yeah.
And we married on the 8th of,
yeah,
May, of course. So,
yeah,
it's a bittersweet day for us.
Yeah.
We don't go out that day anyway. So my son comes here,
right.
But that's how it was. And so our Hong Kong trip was slightly marred. And but having said that, we've got back into the swing of things as soon as possible, and then we were due to come home.
This would be 1960.
No, 57.
Sorry, yes.
And I can't remember quite what happened at the time, but we had a farewell do. It was wonderful. And then we were put back a couple of weeks or something, Doc. And I remember going out with the Music Society on a trip. This was specially laid on for us. And they gave me a pair of skis to water ski. It was wonderful. I had no trouble at all. I couldn't believe this. But we had a good day with them. And then I think for some reason we had to wait another fortnight. I don't know what it was. And we came back to England. And
so you came back to where?
I came back to Bristol. Right. In 49, I didn't tell you this. In 49, my mother, she had been living in a bombed home where we were living at Ashton. Then a friend of hers took her in for a while. And then in 49, when I came home on leave from Germany, we decided we wanted to buy a house. We didn't have the money. I only had £600 at the time. And my mother-in-law loaned me £900. She'd come home from India,
yeah,
and she never took any of that money back. She lived in this house all the time until she died. She said, "No, I'll live here with your mum."
So this is the house you bought?
This is the house we bought. We'd been all over Bristol looking for houses, and it poured in the morning, and I was soaking wet. I was in civvy clothes. I was in civvy clothes in the morning. In the afternoon, I was in khaki in the morning. In the afternoon, I came here in my blue uniform, and I once again got soaked, because you didn't have any car. You had to come by tram or bus. And she said, "You better come in the evening when my husband's here." And we came here in the evening, and there was a man in this room buying the house. And we were in the other room,
yeah,
trying to buy the house. And this man had offered £1,600 for the house. They wanted £1,500, and I had that money in my pocket. Anyway, Mr. B, his name's gone out of my head for the moment, but they were a nice couple, and the wife was in there, and she said, "I'm going to call my husband." And he came, and he said, "There's a man there offering me £1,600. I said, "Cash?" He said, "Oh, no, he can't raise that." I said, "Look, I got £1,600 in my back pocket. You can have it or no." And his wife said, "Take it." So that was it. We bought the house straight away. I went straight to the furniture shop and told them I wanted some beds here. on the following Monday. So I was going back to Germany the next ruddy day, you see. So my mum moved in, and Julie's mum and her auntie, they lived here for years, and we used to come here on leave, because Julie's mum and aunt went to Folkestone to start with, and I couldn't afford this business going up and down, so that's why we got them up here eventually. And they lived here for some years.
Right. So when you came back from Hong Kong, you came to live here in Bristol?
Yes.
And where were you based, work-wise?
Work-wise?
Yeah.
A place called Great Scotland Yard.
Right, okay. You went to Great Scotland. So what rank were you now?
I was still WO1.
Yeah.
I didn't tell you that I'd been offered a commission in 1949. Mm-hmm. I turned it down because, first of all, it was what they called short service commissions, which had just come on the market. Otherwise, you had to go to Sandhurst and all the rest of it. When these short service commissions came out, nobody trusted them very much. The point was that if you didn't make the grade, or they didn't think you made the grade, you were out of the army. You couldn't go back in as a rank you were before. You take the point? So I didn't want any of that lark. Just in case I didn't make the grade, I think I could have done, in view of what happened after with some of my sergeants who came majors, but that's another story, isn't it? And so I came home. I had a month's leave, embarkation leave, had a good time in Bristol, and then I went back to London.
So were you living in army accommodation there? I mean,
yes. But I must tell you about the journey.
Yeah.
I got on the train. Was that I can't remember when that was, this time or the time before. I got in the train, and the carriages in those days, you know, four aside, mm-hmm. not there was a corridor, of course, but there were seven ladies in this carriage, and myself. Nobody said a word, like we don't, you know. And I thought I might have told you this, but I couldn't have done. It must have happened at this particular time. Mm-hmm. We got to Bath, and the ticket collector came. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Tickets, please." And the lady in the corner, I didn't realise it till then, but she wasn't English, you know what I mean? And she's looking round, and I said, "Farkarten." "Ach ja," she said. She was German, you see. And she produced her ticket, and the conductor was laughing. And then we got into conversation. I spoke reasonable German at the time, and we held quite a conversation, in which time we spoke about a place called Iserlohn and the 10th Hussars and the YMCA. We were chatting for a while, and then we stopped. Lady in the corner said, "Excuse me, I was serving in Iserlohn." I said, "I beg your pardon." She said, "Well, I wasn't, but my husband was." And I said, "Who was that?" She said, "My name is Abel Smith." I said, "Oh, you're Colonel Abel Smith's wife." She said, "Yes, I am. And you're Mr. Metcalf, aren't you?" Really. But it went from one to another. And everyone, except the poor old German lady who started it all, we all had some connection. You know what I mean? One way or another. And when I told my wife, I phoned her when I got to London, because it didn't stop there. The journey went, you know, we were chatting about people we knew. I got to London, I got on the underground to go to where I had to go. And I suddenly felt someone looking at me, boring into my head. I think it was this time. I had a feeling I might have told you this before. And I looked round, and it was Eileen Fenson, the sister of the girl I used to court when I was in India.
Yeah.
And she came and hugged me, said, "You're Mick, aren't you?" I was in civvies. She said, "You out the army?" I said, "No," and I told her why. And we corresponded after. She'd married by then. She's dead now, of course, another one. But she was older than me. But I got to London, and I was taken to the depot at Kensington Palace Barracks. That's right behind the palace. Backs onto Kensington Palace, if you know it, mm-hmm. in Church Street. And I reported to my major, Major Frank Dawson, with whom I played rugby and hockey and cricket, and we got on very well together. And then he retired. And I got a man there called Perry Mason, with whom I had served in Korea. And then I went out one day to get some food. I used to have my lunch, used to go and buy a sandwich across to Marks and Spencer's or Woolworths. And I went over there. Oh, no, it was a big store in Kensington, a big store, but they had a delicatessen place. And I always used to buy a quarter of ham and a couple of sandwiches, and go back and eat it in my barracks. I never wanted the food that they had there, because I always had a meal when I went home. And I stood next to a man with a beard, and he was a BBC commentator. I can't think of his name at the moment, but I knew him well, and he was ordering his lunch, 2 ounces of ham. And I didn't want the quarter of ham, but I never wanted to buy 2 ounces, and it seemed so petty. And I thought, bugger it, if you can... I wish I could remember his name. You would know him. He had a beard. He was a commentator on the BBC.
Yeah.
And then...
So what was your work at Great Scotland Yard?
I was in charge of the section.
Nice.
No. Perry Mason, my commander, he was the chap I had known in Germany. I didn't... In Korea. Mm-hmm. But I went for this particular day... Very early on, I went to buy a sandwich, and suddenly someone said, "It's Mick, isn't it?" And I looked round, and it was Susan from the YMCA in Iserlohn. And I couldn't believe it. She was a cook there, you see. And we hugged each other, much to the enjoyment of all the people about. And she said, "Whatever are you doing here?" I was in civvies. I said, "Oh, at Kensington Palace." She said, "What, not with Mason?" I said, "Yes." "How do you know him?" She said, "Well, I'm working at the officer's mess where he lives." She said, "Has he said anything to you, Mick?" I said, "No, why should he?" She said, "Well, you went to his bloody wedding when he was a second lieutenant." I couldn't believe it. He married one of the YMCA girls while we were in Iserlohn, and Julie and I went to his wedding. He never, ever said anything to me about it. Never. I actually wrote to him when I came
home. He never said anything to you about what? You
about knowing me beforehand.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, I went to his wedding and, right. You know, and I mean, the girl from the YMCA whom he married came from Bristol, whom I knew very well.
Right.
Went to school with my daughter, you know. Mm. So he never, ever said, and I couldn't believe it. And she said, "I don't believe it, Mick. You mean he hasn't said anything?" I said, "No, never said a word to me." I said, "And I'm bloody well not going to ask him about it." I never did. Till a few years back, I wrote him a letter. He never answered it. Nice enough man, Perry. I got on well with him. And then I used to go in Hyde Park during the lunchtime and eat my sandwich in the park there.
So what sort of work were you doing? Sorry to interrupt, but I mean, you were still policing the army.
Oh, yes, yes.
So were you policing the army in London?
Yes.
Yes, right.
Which was quite different from policing army abroad.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were now under British jurisdiction. We dealt with our army offences unless they were serious enough that the police took over.
Right.
You understand me?
Okay. Yeah.
And that's what happened. There were quite a lot of crime, by the way.
Mm. There must have been a lot of soldiers in London then.
Oh, yes. Yes. My chaps did quite a lot of work in London, and I was in the same position. I didn't do much crime work because I was still doing reports and things. I did most of the administration department.
Right.
And
so
then...
part of Great Scotland Yard, which was the... You know,
I'll come back to you in a moment. Yes, I was stationed at Kensington Palace Barracks, London District, where this major was. One morning I got a call from the colonel, whom I knew very well, and he said, "Metcalf, my RSM's leaving and I want you over here tomorrow." So my wife by this time had come, was living with me up in... That's another funny little story I might tell you. I used to go in on the bus every day before I bought my car, and people used to say good morning and so on. I was always in civvies, you see, and I used to sit by a lady, always, there's always a seat by, and we got in a conversation, and she didn't know who I was. I never told her. One morning I had to go on a court-martial, and I went there with all my medals up, and of course I was in uniform, and there was a sort of, I got on the bus, and they all sort of looked and stopped talking. I said, "I'm sorry if I frightened you." And the lady I sat with, she said, "I didn't even know you were a soldier." Anyway, that was that. But I went to the colonel's place. And the major there, was a major I had in Hong Kong who was not a soldier, not a policeman at all. He wasn't a good policeman. Eventually, I got on all right with him, but he was a man I didn't like particularly, and one with whom I didn't get on, and neither did a lot of other people. Eventually, I went down to his house where he lived outside London and decorated it for him. Well, you know, anyway, that's another story. And the Colonel and I got on very well together, and by which time I bought a small Morris car. Great Scotland Yard was away from New Scotland Yard. It was in a little... You come off the... into... God. Piccadilly Circus, yeah? Mm-hmm. No, that's not right. The church is on that side. The square, what's the square? Nelson's Column.
Trafalgar.
You come off there into the main road up the where the cenotaph is, yes? And as